God bless you, and welcome to Spirit and Truth Fellowship International's audio podcast. Our goal is to provide you with Bible-based teachings that will help you walk in a transforming relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. We hope you will be inspired by what you're about to hear.
Welcome to this teaching titled Tactics of the Enemy, a study of Proverbs 7. Before I get into any of the meat or the substance of this teaching, I would like to address why this teaching now. In fact, I'm recording this teaching in October of 2008, and it's at the end of October each year in the United States of America that we celebrate a holiday called Halloween. It was also called All Saints Day, and it's really a Day of the Dead. It has some pagan roots that go back, and that's a whole other story. But it's at this time of the year that children dress up in various costumes, go from house to house, and they do what we call trick or treating. They knock on the door and ask for a treat, that is candy, which is usually given. And the idea is if they don't get candy, they would do some kind of trick on the homeowner. Well, this holiday, in fact, is a very dark holiday. It has a lot of satanic and pagan roots. Many of the kids dress up as goblins, demons, and different little things like that. So that's why this teaching at this time of year, this teaching titled Tactics of the Enemy. See, God does not want us to be ignorant of Satan's devices or Satan's schemes. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2:11, the King James says, "Lest Satan should get an advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." The word devices is in the plural. In the NIV, it's translated as schemes. He certainly has many devices and many schemes, and they are all about us all the time. Currently, throughout the world, we're seeing a rise in witchcraft, a rise in occultic activity. There's a bookstore in America called Borders and another one called Barnes & Noble. These are huge national chains. I was recently in both of those chains and noted that they've got entire sections devoted to occultism, to the witchcraft movement called Wicca. They actually are selling now tarot cards, charms, amulets. In some of the stores, they're under lock and key in a display case because people have a tendency to steal them. So why this teaching now? Well, again, I believe Satan's devices and schemes are all about us, and there's a rise in his activities. It doesn't take many of us much to look at the television and note that some of the shows are promoting the state of the dead. Are they really alive? For instance, there's a show in America called Ghost Whisperer. Even on a channel called the Discovery Channel, which is generally devoted to scientific type endeavors, we have Ghost Hunters, a show which is devoted to investigate paranormal activities, quote unquote. We also have shows that are devoted or targeted directly at our children. Recently, my wife Lori and I have had the privilege and blessing of being able to spend a lot of time with three of my grandkids. I was watching a television show or a cartoon called Dora and Diego. Seems to be an innocent enough little show until all of a sudden a witch came on the scene or an ice queen promoting spells, charms, and what it promotes is having control over the environment. Well, that's really what witchcraft is all about. The movement of Harry Potter really is old news now. In fact, it's probably passé. It's promoted as pretty much as harmless. But Harry Potter promoted wizardry, witchcraft, charms, spells, and control over others and the environment. My point is that this stuff is prevalent. It's permeating the atmosphere of this age. And these things that I've just mentioned, the witchcraft and all of these other, they're only one of the very small aspects of Satan's devices. Consider sex, violence, rebellion, murder, mayhem, and all the cruelty that he promotes. It doesn't take any one of us long in looking at television, movies, books, video games, or the internet to see that he is promoting his schemes heavily and it's targeted primarily at our youth. So what's the answer? Well, I believe that God provides us an answer. First, he tells us he doesn't want us ignorant of Satan's devices. And he also tells us in Corinthians that we're not to be ignorant of spiritual matters. Well, understanding satanic activity and the devices of Satan certainly qualifies as a spiritual matter. So let's turn now to Proverbs chapter 7. And as you're turning there, I want to remind you that Proverbs is a book of wise sayings. We believe Proverbs was written by Solomon, who was, quote-unquote, the wisest man on the face of the earth. And I believe that many of Proverbs are directed at youth, or what God calls the simple fool. It's really just an unlearned, simple person who just doesn't know any better. In fact, Proverbs chapter 2 says, "My son, if you accept my words." Proverbs 3, "My son." Proverbs 4, "Listen, my son, to a father's instruction." Proverbs 5, "My son." Proverbs 6, "My son." Proverbs 7, "My son." See, these are wise sayings directed to the simple fool, the young, the unlearned, so that they can know what Proverbs 2:9 says, every right, just, fair, and every good path. I also want to remind you that Proverbs was written approximately 1,000 years before Christ was born. That's almost 3,000 years ago. These are incredible truths that have been recorded here for over 3,000 years. So I want to take the time now with you to go to Proverbs chapter 7 and see what truths we can glean, what perspectives we can have, and what different applications we can gain out of Proverbs chapter 7, specifically concerning our enemy, Satan, the devil, his tactics, his methods, his motives, and his moves. I believe that as we look at this, one of these, the lessons that we can see very clearly is that he intends to attack us by using our senses. Another one is what are the principal devices he uses, specifically words. The third lesson is the paradigm of the spiritual sickness and how it parallels physical sickness. There's also a lesson to learn concerning his methodology of pressure applied through pleasure and pain. And he also uses deceit or lying, fear, rejection, and rebellion. I believe we'll also see what Satan's goal is, and finally, ultimately, we'll see what God's answer is for our defense. So hopefully now you have turned to Proverbs chapter 7, and I would really appreciate it, certainly not if you're driving, but if you're not driving and if you're sitting at home and you're listening to this teaching, I would now like you to pause the teaching and take this time, take the next 5 to 10 minutes to read Proverbs chapter 7 from beginning to end. Again, of course, not if you're driving. Keep your eyes on the road and your hands on that wheel. And I will come back to you in a few minutes after you have finished reading Proverbs chapter 7. Well, I welcome you back if you've had the opportunity to pause this teaching. And I would like to again remind you that we're going to read Proverbs chapter 7 with the intention of discovering the tactics, schemes, methods, motives that Satan has. I believe God has interspersed these through this beautiful proverb, and that this is a phenomenal lesson in the methods and tactics of the enemy. One of the things that we'll see that God has revealed is how he intends to attack us through our senses. And another one of his devices is that he uses words. Also going to be a revealing of the paradigm of the spiritual sickness and how it parallels physical sickness. Also, we're going to see how Satan uses pressure applied through pleasure and pain. And then interspersed through this proverb, we'll see uses of deceit, lying, rejection, rebellion, pride, and also a tendency to hide behind religiousness. We'll also look at Satan's goal. And finally, we're going to discover what God's answer is for our defense. So let's go now to Proverbs chapter 7, and let's begin in verse 1. I'm going to quickly read verses 1 through 6, because the focus of this first lesson doesn't occur till later in this proverb. "My son, keep my words and store my commands within you. Keep my commands and you will live. Guard my teachings as the apple of your eye," that is the pupil. "Bind them on your fingers, write them on the tablet of your heart." Verse 4, "Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your kinsman. They will keep you from the adulteress," that is the strange woman, the harlot, "from the wayward wife with her seductive words. At the window of my house I looked out through the lattice. I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men." The word simple there literally is simple fool. It's a youth, as verse 7 goes on, it's a youth who lacked judgment. That literally is what a simple fool is. It's generally a young person. I like to think of it as that 2 or 3 year old or young child who just doesn't know. I'm reminded of my grandson Seth, who a year ago when he was 2 years old, he got out of his mother's car and we had black asphalt as our driveway. And he got out of the car and unbeknownst to her, he had taken his shoes off. Well, it was a hot summer day and he ran across that black pavement. Soon his feet started burning from the heat of the pavement and his tender young 2-year-old feet began to seriously hurt. He starts crying, but rather than running back to his mother who's calling him, he continues to run away, trying to get away from the pain of the heat on his feet, only causing more damage. See, that's a simple fool. He just does not know. He has no idea. He's never been taught, never been instructed. And this is the type of person that God is saying that's being noticed, that's being watched. It's a simple fool in verse 7, a youth who lacks judgment. Let's continue with the record in verse 8. He, this simple fool, this unlearned youth who lacks judgment, is going down the street near her corner. He's walking along in the direction of her house. Verse 9, at twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in. I believe that there's a perspective that we could take or glean from this, that there is definitely a contrast between good and evil, dark and light, that God is light, and that this is what happens that when we enter into the darkness of night. In verse 10, then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with crafty intent. Remember in verse 5, this woman is referred to as the adulteress. Now in verse 10, as a prostitute, literally a harlot. And in Scripture, God many times refers to idolatry as spiritual adultery. It's spiritual prostitution, spiritual harlotry. And that's why I believe there's a whole level of a lesson that can be gleaned from this, that it's the contrast of good and evil, of light versus dark. And that now, that one of the lessons that we can see is there's a whole greater spiritual lesson here beyond just the way of a man with a woman or a young simple youth with a harlot or prostitute. This is a lesson in spiritual adultery, in idolatry. In verse 11, she is loud and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Now in the street, now in the squares, at every corner she lurks. There's a lesson right there that we can take from this, that evil is never far from any one of us. We don't have to wander far from God to find evil. In fact, it almost is just a slight tangent move away from God to find evil. It lurks at every corner. It's in the street. It's in the squares. And evil is out there looking for you. It's straying. It never stays at its home. It's wandering, and it's going to try and take hold of you. In fact, verse 13 says, she took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face she said. See, this is what evil is. Evil is bold. Evil is brazen. And it's going to try and take hold of you, and it's going to try and lure you in. And it's out there, it's lurking, it's never far away. In verse 14, this adulteress says, I have fellowship offerings at home. Wow, that sounds pretty religious, doesn't it? Well, I think that's one of the lessons that we can take from this, is that many times that Satan, one of his tactics is to hide behind religion, to hide behind noble causes, things that sound good, things that look really righteous and appear great. You know, not necessarily even in the religious sense. You know, great movements that are world movements. I believe that many times he makes them sound really good, but in essence, they lead to nothing but idolatry from God. And here in verse 14, she says, I have fellowship offerings at home. Today I have fulfilled my vows. Wow, sounds really good. So I came out to meet you, and I looked for you, and I found you. Now here's an entirely another lesson that we can glean from this. It's a different perspective. But how many times does evil come, and it cloaks itself by trying to make you feel special? I try to think back of how many times I have literally made errors in my life because the appeal was to my own pride and my ego, to myself. And that's exactly what the tactic that the enemy takes here, the tactic of pride, ego, and self. So I came out to meet you. I looked for you and have found you. Well, this poor, simple, unlearned fool is being set up in a big way. And I think that's another lesson that we can take from Proverbs chapter 7 here, is that many times evil intends to set us up. Now look at the appeal, because I believe this is one of the lessons, and the lesson specifically is the battle of the senses. In verse 16, the adulteress says to him, "I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt." Well, for a linen to be colored means it has color. It appeals to the visual senses. And that's one of the tactics of the enemy. He tries visual appeal. How many times is it a good-looking girl or guy that basically he'll send your way, you know, or he'll try to tempt you through your sense of sight? Here, God clearly reveals the temptation is by an appeal to colored linens. Verse 17, "I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon." There's the sense of smell. The next one is, "Come, let's drink deep of love till morning." Well, to drink involves the sense of taste. So now we've got seeing, smelling, and tasting. And this is all in the context of at the twilight, at the dark, with the adulteress. I believe God is clearly giving us a perspective that we can take, that our enemies, some of his tactics, are going to be an appeal to seeing, smelling, and tasting. And then the adulteress goes on and she says, "Let's enjoy ourselves with love." Well, I believe lovemaking probably is one of the greatest appeals to the sense of touch, to feeling. And also, how did all of these verses 14 through 18, how did she make these appeals? Well, it says that she, in verse 13, "with a brazen face, she said." In other words, the appeal is through words. It's something that he is hearing. So we've got from verse 13 to verse 18, the appeal to seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and hearing. Well, another lesson that we can glean from Proverbs chapter 7 is the fact that Satan employs words. Let's look at verse 5. And I've got a couple of these noted, but let's just go back and look at verse 5. And it says in verse 5, "They," God's instructions here, "will keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife, with her seductive" what? Words. See, God is telling us right there, one of the ways the enemy is going to attack us is through words. And the word seductive literally means smooth or slippery. Go down to verse 11. She's loud and defiant. There's another, loud implies, you know, speaking or the sense of sound. And what is she loud with? She's loud with her words. You know, so many times it's the loudness of the attack or the high amplification, if you would. You know, it just seems to just overwhelm you. Well, this woman is loud and she's defiant. And it says in verse 13 again, we already noted that with brazen face, she said, again, she's saying words. Now going down to verse 21, "with persuasive words, she led him astray." See, words are called the fiery darts of the wicked. They're offensive weapons of attack. When you think of weapons, arrows or darts are not like most any other of the weapons that a person would have, at least in the ancient days. A sword was used, it could parry, it could deflect, and it would also lunge and could be used as both an offensive and a defensive weapon. But an arrow is quite different. An arrow is shot and reaches out, unleashed at a target. It's basically ejected towards a certain objective. In Proverbs chapter 26, while we're in Proverbs, let's just go there for a second. In Proverbs chapter 26, verse 18. If you get there before me, then just bear with me. Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 18. "Like a madman shooting firebrands or deadly arrows is a man who deceives his neighbor." How does he deceive a neighbor? Through words. And says, "I was only joking." See, a madman shooting firebrands or deadly arrows. Ephesians tells us that we're to take the shield of faith to quench the fiery darts of the wicked. It's words which are the fiery darts. And Satan is a master at using words. In Revelation chapter 12, verse 10, he's basically called the accuser of the brethren. Well, how does he accuse? He accuses through words. Remember where Jesus said, "You are of your father, the devil," or Satan, and he's the father of lies? Lies, again, words. Words are one of the most principal things that Satan uses to attack. And here, Proverbs chapter 7, God has clearly identified in verse 5, seductive words. Verse 11, loud and defiant. Verse 13, she said. Verse 21, persuasive words, seduced, smooth talk. I just stand in awe that God 3,000 years ago writes or inspires Solomon to write Proverbs chapter 7, and it lays out the attack that Satan uses through words. I just want to take a second and remind you of some of the methods Satan uses, specifically whispering. See, that's one who secretly passes on an evil report. How much damage has been done just through that whispering and murmuring? Or how about gossip? Remember, God has records all over Proverbs and Psalms about a gossip. That's a person who sensationalizes. They spread rumors and they magnify partial and untrue information. How much damage and destructiveness has been done to gossip? How many close friendships are destroyed because of gossip? And that's one of the ways in which Satan uses words. Or how about slander? You know, a slanderer, in fact, one of the names for Satan is the accuser or the slanderer. It's one who seeks to destroy another's reputation. And a busybody, that's a person who goes around digging up evil, and then they try to make it their business to spread it. Satan uses words to attack, uses words to lure us. He uses words to wear us down, and his attack will be loud, it will be defiant, and it will be brazen. Another perspective or lesson that we can learn from Proverbs 7 here is what I call the disease paradigm. Now, one of my professions was in hazardous waste, and while I was in that, I had to learn how toxins can affect the body. And I believe one day as I was reading Proverbs chapter 7 that God reminded me of a paradigm that we're taught in school about physical stages of disease. The pattern that generally disease follows is, first of all, you're taught about ignorance. Ignorance is a lack of knowledge of how contamination and disease is spread. It's ignorant of preventative measures. It's just ignorant of what you need to do to keep yourself healthy. Well, remember, in this Proverbs chapter 7, God is talking about a simple fool, which is an ignorant person. The next stage after ignorance is what we call exposure. Exposure literally just means that you're open to contamination. You're in a situation where you're susceptible to become contaminated by a hazard because you've placed yourself where you can be exposed. The next stage of physical disease is contamination. Contamination occurs when germs are on you. They've literally crossed the line and they are able to, you know, they haven't quite invaded you, but you're not just exposed to it. Those germs are actually on you. Many times people are quarantined so that the contamination, they try to limit and interrupt the exposure to contamination stage. After contamination comes infection. That's where the germs have actually entered into the body and they begin to overcome your body's defenses. They take hold, they reproduce, and they begin to spread through your body causing damage. That's when the fever rises, when you get the headaches or swelling, or where your body's actually showing that the invader, the germs, have actually begun doing damage to your body. After an infectious stage, then you go into a disease stage. That's where infection begins to affect many of the vital life-supporting systems of your body. It almost and sometimes can become systemic. It spreads. It can affect major systems and organs. And if this is not interrupted, it will generally result with death unless the body can produce antibodies or bring about some means of interrupting the disease stage. It'll cause death. See, at every stage of physical attack, it can be arrested. You can limit it. You can stop it. Although we recognize that sometimes, depending upon how invasive that attack is, there can be permanent damage caused. In other words, there can be consequences. Well, I believe this physical stages of disease has a parallel in the spiritual realm too, and I believe God has revealed this in Proverbs chapter 7. Let's go to verse 7, and remember the first stage is ignorance. Well, in verse 7, God says, I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who lacked judgment. That's ignorance. How did it progress? Well, he's just la-di-da-da-da-da-da. He's walking down the street, verse 8, near her corner. There's exposure. He's walking in the direction of her house. See, you know, he's gone from ignorant to now exposed. He's not just ignorant out in the middle of a field where there's nothing around. He's ignorant and he's going down the street near her corner. He now has resulted in an exposure to this evil. The next stage that I mentioned was contamination. And I believe in verse 13, God is showing us where the contamination actually occurs. Verse 13, she took hold of him and kissed him, and with a brazen face, she said. This is the first place where there's actually a connection between him and her. Well, connection is what is required for contamination to occur. The other day, my little granddaughter, Mackenzie, goes off to school. For all summer long, she's been perfectly fine and healthy. She's 4 years old and she's off to preschool. She comes home by the end of the week. She's got sniffles, a runny nose, and she's, you know, coughing a little bit. Why? She went off to nursery school where she's exposed to all of these other little kids to the end that at some point someone contaminated her. Usually by playing with contaminated toys or something, but that's the stage here in verse 13. Contamination occurred when she took hold of him and kissed him. There's touch and there's been a transfer. Now we continue on. Remember, the next stage of physical disease is infection. Well, I believe infection occurs in Proverbs chapter 7, specifically in verse 21. With persuasive words, she led him astray. Now, it's not just a matter of seduction and her contaminating him. He has now crossed the line and become an active participant. And it's at that point in verse 21, with those persuasive words, she led him astray. She seduced him with her smooth talk. See, he's now a participant in this. You know, for him to be led astray means that he's going along with it. So the next stage is disease, and that, I believe, occurs right in verse 23, till an arrow pierces his liver. You know, the liver is a vital function. Remember I said that disease is a state where infection begins to affect many life-supporting systems and functions of the body. Well, there we are right there. The arrow has pierced his liver. You have one liver, folks, and we can't live without it. And this arrow has pierced his liver. Remember also, I'm just thinking here as I'm reading, an arrow that pierces. And earlier we talked about the words and the arrows and the fiery darts. Well, there's the arrow. It pierced his liver. And that's the state of disease. And the final stage is death. And in verse 27, her house is a highway to the grave representing death. And also in verse 22, all at once he led her like an ox to the slaughter. See, he's not slaughtered yet. That's the disease stage, but that's the tangent or the direction he's heading in is to be slaughtered, like a deer stepping into a noose, the noose resulting in asphyxiation, right? It's ultimately going to kill that deer, till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare. Again, see, the snare is the trap that's going to take the bird's life. He's not dead at this stage, but that's the direction he's heading in, little knowing, in verse 23, little knowing it will cost him his life. I was just amazed when I saw this. Remember John 10:10, the thief comes not but to steal, to kill, and to destroy. I'm just stand in absolutely amazement that as I was reading Proverbs chapter 7 and originally saw, and I believe you can see it here too, there is absolutely ignorance, exposure, contamination, infection, disease, and death written 3,000 years ago specifically so that God was teaching this young son, which Solomon says, my son, verse 1, keep my words and store up my commands within you. How powerful is this? What a lesson in life that God does not have to specifically say ignorance, exposure, contamination, infection, disease, and death, but that is in effect what he's done. That's how we can apply this, and that's exactly what mankind has taught nowadays. It's what I was taught in hazardous waste school concerning spread of disease and hazards and how they affect our body, and here it is, Proverbs chapter 7. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing that God has laid that lesson out. You know, another lesson that we can glean is what I call the pressure, pleasure, pain cycle. Satan works by applying pressure. And the pressure that he applies is specifically pleasure and pain. Remember in verse 13, you know, she took hold of him. I mean, there's pressure. She took hold of him. To grab something is to apply pressure. And she takes hold of him. I think that's an application or a lesson that we can glean. And also that she's loud and defiant. See, there's pressure. It's just a high volume or amplitude coming against you. And as I said, in verse 13, taking hold, applying pressure. Well, what specifically was the pressure that she applied? Well, clearly, it was a pressure of a sexual nature, you know, sexual indicating, you know, the pleasure motive, the appeal to pleasure. In verse 21, again, we looked at persuasive words. See, it's just a very heavy pressure through the use of words and that persuasiveness. And then also, in verse 21, she seduced him with her smooth talk. Satan knows how to get to every one of us. And I'm absolutely amazed. He'll come at you with the pleasure lure and boom, backs right off and comes at you with the pain lure. Pain specifically through trying to pressure you off of the word. Maybe not necessarily a physical pain, but emotional pain, just discomfort. Lori and I have been talking about this. You're just absolutely amazed at how you endure through what you believe to be an attack, and then he'll turn around and attack your children. And then if not your children, your grandchildren. If you're going to stand for God, God is telling you, you better be prepared. There's going to be an attack, and it's going to come in the form of pleasure and pain. Where's the pain in chapter 7 or Proverbs chapter 7? Well, I consider infection, disease, and also death pretty painful. And that's specifically verse 22. All at once he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter. That doesn't sound too pleasurable. And certainly in contrast to the pleasure of the sexual lure in verses 14 through 18. Or how about the deer stepping into a noose? I think probably it's pretty excruciating to be asphyxiated through a noose around your neck. Or how about the arrow that pierces the liver? That sounds pretty painful for sure. Or the bird darting into a snare. See, Satan is going to pressure you, and he is going to pressure you with pleasure or with pain. And if you yield to the pleasure, it's going to end in pain. It's going to ouch. That's what an arrow in the liver is. It's a big ouch. I think of the pressure sometimes, many times. In fact, it's almost like the frog in the pot. You know the story of how do you boil a frog? Well, you put them in a pot and you slowly increase the heat. I remember years ago, my dad came home and he brought home a lobster. And he took that lobster and he had this pot of boiling water and then he tried to put the lobster in the pot, tail first. You've never seen a lobster snapping and squiggling as much as you can imagine. What's the right way to do it? Well, you stick it in head first and boil it. That's what Satan does to us, see? You know, well, certainly he does. He can make a frontal attack and just come straight at you, like plenty of records of that in the Word of God. But a lot of times it's just slowly turning up the heat to the point that you don't even feel yourself being cooked. That's why God says bad company corrupts good character. It doesn't just happen overnight. The old saying is hang out with the dog, pretty soon you'll get fleas. Just hanging out with bad company, and I've seen it in my life, and I've seen it in many others' lives, where you just start hanging out around the wrong people, the wrong influences. And that's why God says in Corinthians, bad company corrupts good character. Can you see here, though, in Proverbs chapter 7, this is absolutely a lesson in the tactics of the enemy. We've seen where he'll go after our senses. One of the ways he does is he uses words. And then how about that pressure, the pain? And then also the spiritual paradigm of disease and how it mirrors the physical paradigm. Well, there's a few other lessons that I believe we've got here. First of all, that there's always usually involved rejection and rebellion. In fact, Satan first rejected God and then he rebelled against him. I believe it's part of his very nature now. And for years, as I've tried to help and work with people who have been caught in different situations and different demonic strongholds, it usually always, not usually, it does always involve rejection and rebellion. In fact, many times in my own personal life where I've gotten myself in some serious trouble, it was because of issues of rejection, ultimately ending up in some rebellious behavior. In verse 11, remember, she's loud and defiant. Defiance is rebelliousness. And remember, God says that rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. Well, you know, witchcraft is idolatry. And I believe Proverbs chapter 7 is an entire lesson in adultery or spiritual idolatry. In verse 19, let's go back to verse 19 because we didn't really look at verse 19 very much. And this adulteress says, "My husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He took his purse filled with money and will not be home till full moon." This is not just some single prostitute. This is a married woman. Oh my gosh, look at the, first of all, the rejection of her husband, the rejection of her marriage vows. How about the rebellious behavior of defiling her marriage bed, the sanctity and sacredness of her marriage bed? Look at the deceitfulness that she's employing. First of all, she's deceiving the young man, and she's also being deceitful to the vows and to the commitment she's made to her husband. Also, look at the crafty planning. She's taken observation that he's taken his purse filled with money. She's thought through that he's not going to be back till the full moon. And also, look in verse 10, with crafty intent. You know, see, these are other lessons that we can glean from this book of Proverbs, that there's rejection and rebellion demonstrated by defiance, by the rejection of her husband, the marriage vows, the rebellious behavior of defiling the marriage bed, of the sexual promiscuity, the deceitfulness, her crafty planning. It also, remember where in verse 12 it talked about her lurking? You know, lurking is an active moving. It's lurking. It's out there. First of all, it's the subtleness, but it also, on her part, there's a very active participation in this. And it's also, it's at every corner. That, again, that temptation being everywhere. Earlier I mentioned that usually pride is involved. And I believe that that's exactly the lesson that God is trying to give us here in verse 15. "So I came out to meet you and looked for you and have found you." It's again, it's always generally an appeal to ego or self. I remember I attended a seminar years ago. And in that seminar, one of the statements that the person made is that it is pride which always keeps us in sinfulness. It's pride that keeps us in sinfulness. And the answer to pride is humility, to submit ourselves one to another. If I've sinned against my brother, I'm to go and I'm to confess my sin and to ask for his forgiveness. In fact, when we opened this teaching, 2 Corinthians 2:11 specifically said, "In order that Satan may not outwit us, for we are not unaware of his schemes." The context of that verse is forgiveness. Go back and read that sometime. See, so here's a whole lesson written right in there. It's a lesson about pride. And again, Satan's sin was his own pride, where he lifted himself up and raised himself up and said, "I will usurp God. I will ascend to the throne of heaven." And also, I mentioned earlier in verse 14, that religious behavior and that how there's a cloaking, that many times Satan is going to hide behind good causes. May not necessarily be religion, but it certainly could be. Sometimes years ago, someone said, "If you ever want to find the devil, just go look behind the pulpit." Well, I think that's a pretty harsh statement because I know of many wonderful men and women behind the pulpit that love the Lord and love our Heavenly Father. But also, there's been a lot of evil that's been promoted in the name of religiousness, been a lot of very wicked and evil things that have been done through the Dark Ages in the periods of Inquisition. And there still is a lot of that that comes up. So we have to be very careful concerning ourselves, that we never hide behind religious attitudes and defenses, because it's one of the ways in which Satan works. And it doesn't even have to be religious in the traditional sense. It could be a cause for Mother Earth. It could be a cause for some of these other things, global warming. I'm not against any of those things. I believe that we need to steward and take care of our resources. But so many times I've seen people get off on tangents that they're forgetting that, you know, this is a lure away of the real plans and purposes of God. Well, I believe God provides an answer. And let's go look in verse 24, because ultimately that's what the lesson of Proverbs chapter 7 is. Sure, God reveals to us the tactics, manners, and methods and moves of the enemy, his schemes or his devices, if you would. But I believe that in Proverbs verse 24, God gives us the answer. He says, "Now then, my sons, listen to me." See, I believe that is a big part of the answer. We need to pay attention to what God has to say. That's why Psalm 119:11 says, "I hid your word in my heart so I would not sin against you." We need to pay attention to God. We need to listen to him. In verse 25, "Do not let your heart turn to her ways." That's a huge principle. We need to guard our heart. Remember, Jesus said to guard our heart because out of our heart, the mouth speaks. So we need to guard our heart. That's the key to deliverance. Guard our heart and pay attention. Listen to what God says. Also, go back to verse 1, and this just parallels it. It's almost like God sandwiches all of these lessons of the enemy's tactics between the first part of this proverb and the last part. In verse 1, "My son, keep my words and store up my commands within you. Keep my commands and you will live." That's what God is saying. You know, the contrasting the living with the death of this adulteress or Satan's desires to steal, kill, and destroy. God says if we keep his commands, store up his commands, keep his words, keep his commands. Look at these imperatives he's telling us. Guard my teachings in verse 2. Guard my teachings as the apple of your eye, the very pupil of your eye. Guard them like you would guard the pupil of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. See, it's the guarding of our heart and the sowing of God's word into our heart that will keep us protected from the tactics of the enemy. I think back about how, again, I mentioned that my grandchildren are sitting here watching cartoons, and there's wizards and witches and ice queens and charms and wizardry and all this kind of stuff. How powerful would it be for us just to teach our children, our young adolescents, the lessons that God has here in Proverbs chapter 7? After all, God says that it was the simple fool that they noticed. You know, it's the person who is uneducated, that's not, or unlearned concerning spiritual matters, that's not necessarily even related to age. But boy, I think back over my own life, and I wish that I had been taught these lessons when I was young. I mean, how powerful would that have been? I think that we need to teach these lessons, to teach the fact that the enemy is out there and God doesn't want us ignorant of Satan's devices. We need to teach how he's going to make an appeal against our senses. And the way in which he's going to do it is he's going to use words to attack. He's going to use seductive, loud, defiant, persuasive, and smooth-talking words. They're the fiery darts of the wicked. He's going to work through deceit, whispering, gossip, slander, and busybodying. And then also the paradigm of spiritual disease and how it parallels physical disease. I believe we should teach our young people this stuff. After all, it's only through knowledge that we gain an ability to overcome our ignorance. We need to teach them about spiritual ignorance, spiritual exposure, contamination, infection, disease, and death. After all, God put it right here in Proverbs chapter 7, and it's directed towards, quote, my son. Also, the lesson of how Satan desires to apply pressure specifically through pleasure and pain. And then also, there will always be the appeal to ego. He's going to work through rejection and rebellion, and he's going to hide. He's going to lurk. He's going to conceal, certainly going to hide his motives, and he's going to also cloak it behind religious or what I would consider good-sounding endeavors or causes. Yet the answer is God. This is a matter in Proverbs chapter 7 of not just an illustration that God is using about the way of a man with an adulteress or an evil woman. Well, after all, this man's evil too when he yields to it. This is much more than just an illustration of a simple fool with an adulteress. No, this is a lesson designed to reveal great truths. This book, Proverbs chapter 7, reveals good versus evil, right versus wrong, light versus darkness. It reveals idolatry. You know, the Bible is not just some old stodgy book that has no relevance to today. Solomon taught these lessons 3,000 years ago. How powerful it would have been had my parents had this level of understanding concerning Satan and his tactics. If I had been able to be taught this from my youth, the way that Satan is going to attack us through our senses with words, that there's a whole paradigm of spiritual disease that patterns after physical disease, that he'll use pressure to pleasure us or to cause us pain, and that he works through rejection and rebellion. I mean, how powerful would that have been for me or you if you had known that? I mean, I just think that we need to teach our young people this so that they can be properly prepared to be able to stand in the trenches of the spiritual war, because that's what it is, that we are in a matter of it's a spiritual war that's going on between God and Satan, and we're caught right in the crossfire. He's going to appeal to your ego, to your pride, and he's going to do it by hiding behind good causes, things that feel good. You know, he's going to cause, you know, work through words to try and get us to lie, to slander, to whisper, to gossip. God has absolutely provided for us. And Proverbs chapter 7 is a phenomenal lesson of how God has concealed his word. And if we have the desire to search it out as like fine gold, that we will find these truths. We need to keep his words. We need to store up his commands. We need to guard his teachings. We need to bind them on our fingers, and we need to write them on the tablet of our hearts. That's why with all conviction at Spirit and Truth Fellowship International, we can say that we need to seek this, to pursue God with all our heart. That's why we say truth matters. Spread the word.
The teaching you just heard was a presentation of Spirit and Truth Fellowship International. For further study, we encourage you to visit our research website, truthortradition.com. If you would like to get your copy of this teaching on CD or tape, you can go online at our home website, stfonline.org/store, or call us toll-free at 888-255-6189. Again, that's 888-255-6189. God bless you.